Okay. So, let's look now at the major frames of NLP, looking at the major frames of NLP. The first one is, which you've heard me saying a number of times, is cause and effect. Now, this appears to be a law of the universe, as in events appear to happen, and there is an effect that caused that. There's a cause for every effect that seems to happen in the universe. You'd agree with that, right? That there's a cause for everything. And what we're seeking to do here is understand that you are the cause. So, whether you're working with somebody on a business situation, because they have a problem in business, or they have a problem in therapy, it's exactly the same. They walk in at effect. They walk in at effect. They feel that they don't have the answer. And that's why they're coming to you. And the difference, say, for example, between mentoring and coaching is about helping the person find the answer. Mentoring is about giving them the answer. So what we're seeking to do is move the client from effect to cause. Every single one of your interventions is designed at its core to move the client, and when I say client, I mean if a therapeutic or business client, please accept that you're moving them from effect to cause. Because the moment you do that, their problem goes away and they start to focus on the solution. Very few people live at the cause. Why do most people live at effect? Why do you guys and why do most people live at effect in their lives? For what purpose? Why do we live at the effect of things, other people, etc.? It is easier, isn't it? How is it easier? You're blaming others, yes. So therefore you don't have to take responsibility or blame yourself, absolutely. It's always somebody else's fault, somebody else to solve. Because the moment you take responsibility, what's the next thing you need to do? Take action. And that's the one thing. Because you know what? Most people are not actually afraid of their problems. You guys aren't afraid of your problems. You're afraid of what you believe you need to do to have your problem go away. So you're actually afraid of the solution, not the problem. Because from a pain pleasures point of view, you know, if you're living with a problem and it's painful, you're happier with that than you are. It's obviously more painful to take the action and do the solution than it is having the problem. Otherwise, you'd just be wired to do it. You just take the action. So we've got to move them from effect to cause. And this quite nicely ties in with our second, if you like, major frame, is results versus reasons. Because as you think about it, if you ask somebody to do something like, say, you know, can you get this report done for me by 3 p.m. on Thursday, and 3 p.m. Thursday comes around and they don't give you the report, what do they give you instead of the report? Reasons why they haven't done it, or some people call those excuses, right? So, if you didn't have reasons, what would you have left? Results. And that's what it's about. That's what being successful is about. Because NLP is about becoming more successful as a human being. And if you do away with your reasons, all you're left with is results. And that equals empowerment. I just think that successful people don't believe their excuses. They don't believe their own excuses that they come up with. So therefore, they don't act upon them. And I think this is a very major, major frame in NLP, and most of us go around living at effect. The thing is, once you become very, very good at NLP, you'll recognize that people give themselves away with their physiology, they give themselves away with their language. You can hear it and you can see it every day. Just by looking at somebody, you can know whether living at effect or living at cause. Just by the way they stand, you can tell that. Now, that's a mind read from a certain perspective, and if you've calibrated enough people, you can pretty much work it out. So, although we're talking about oftentimes getting rid of mind reads, there are times in NLP where you'll need to be mind reading at the same time. And that's when we get to the master practitioner level. Because if you think about language, what language do we often use? We'll say things like, you know, well, you know, you have made me angry. You have done this. You have made me feel this way. You have made me feel that way. Now, when we say that, what we're doing is we're living out effect, aren't we? Because what we're saying is, you have, as in you've made me feel a certain way. Now, we know that if you've been to my breakthrough or even FYD, a couple of often change where I actually put it, you know, you can't go and find a bucket of emotion. It doesn't exist, does it? You can't find a bucket of anger. You can't find a bucket of hurt or a bucket of guilt. You can't find these things because they only exist in one place, don't they? Where do they exist? Inside you, don't they? So therefore, if they're inside of you, it's not possible for somebody else to make you feel something because they can't get it inside of you. The feeling's already there. All that's happened is they've triggered off in you your unwritten or unconscious rule, if you like, of what needs to happen outside of you for you to give yourself permission to feel guilt, to feel hurt, anger, sadness, fear, whatever it might be. So we're seeking to move people from effect to cause. And always, when we move someone from effect to cause, we always have to go through something else first. Because what's preventing someone? What prevents someone from going from effect to cause? Stuff, isn't it? Okay, great. Let's have a look at the NLP communication model, and then we'll have a look at a few more of the actual frames. And what we're saying here is that we've literally got 2 million bits of information that are bombarding your nervous system at any one time. Because as you're sitting there listening to me, how much attention are you paying to, say, how the chair feels pushing up against your bum? Or maybe how your clothes are feeling against your body? Because what you pay attention to becomes your reality. So if I imagine right now that you've got nits, let's say imagine that you've got nits, and they're crawling all over your body, for example. Nits. It's itchy. Anybody else, like, in the next 10 seconds or so, begin to feel like you want to scratch or itch at all? Yeah, because those feelings are there, but the most of the time you're not paying attention to them until your attention is drawn to them. They're always there. There's always things that irritate you in your body, of course, in the environment and on your skin, etc. But most of the time you just delete them because it's not important. And so we've actually only got this 7 plus or minus 2 bits of information that you can pay attention to at any one time. So for example, if I asked you to memorize a list of things, you could probably hold, you know, if I gave you 7 things to memorize in a list, you could probably remember those 7 things consciously and recall them. But if I gave you 20 things to recall, you probably wouldn't have the same. You probably only remember 7, 9 sort of things you're probably about to remember quite quickly, unless you use a particular memory technique. But if I asked you what your telephone number is, what's your telephone number? Everybody shout out now. Telephone number? There you go. So where was that number before I asked you? In your unconscious mind, because you weren't going around all the time like having to say it over and over again to remember it. It's just stored in your unconscious mind, because your unconscious mind's storing all the memories for you. And so what we've got is, we've said that we've got 2 million bits coming in, and as soon as they hit our nervous system, we're going to either delete, distort, or generalize the information coming in through our major filters. And we know our major filters are how we store time, space, and energy inside of ourselves. Language, as we filter it through our own language. Memories that we've had of the past. Decisions we've made. Metaprograms, which we cover in Master Practitioner. Values and beliefs and attitudes. That in turn then has us create our internal representation. Now, internal representation, what is that? What is an internal representation? How you see something, or how you hear it, how you experience it when you're feeling it, or it could be to a lesser extent gustatory and taste. So it's basically the representation we make of the outside world inside. Everybody here can make a picture in your mind, can't you? If I asked everybody here to remember, say, if you remember your number plate of your car, How many people here are now making a picture of your number plate in your car? Just raise your hand if you're making a picture of the number plate in your car to remember it, yeah? So you all know how to make pictures in your mind. And again, if I ask you to remember, say, how the sound of your car engine is, you know, when you turn it on in the morning and it first starts up, can you remember exactly what it sounds like every single time when you turn it over? Are you remembering a sound, perhaps? And certainly you can all remember a feeling. You can remember the warm feeling of how it feels to be around a warm fire, for example. Everybody can tap into that. So you can always create an internal representation, and that's what we're doing the whole time. Human beings take information in, we filter it, and then we create a meaning for it. And the only way you create a meaning for something that happens outside of you is by creating an internal representation of it inside of you. So when we're changing things for our clients, what are we changing? Always changing the internal representation. Because when you change the internal representation, you change the meaning. And when you change the meaning, you change their actions. And if you change their actions, you change their behavior. And if you change their behavior, you change their results. And everybody, outcomes, exactly. So everybody comes to you for better results. But if you work at the results level, what someone's doing outside of themselves, are you going to get a long-lasting change, yes or no? No. So we're working at the unconscious level, the internal representation. So this particular event is all about all the practitioner material is actually based on this only. Pretty much, there's a little bit in here, but most of it's all here. Every intervention we do, we're all working at the internal representation, we're working on state, or we're working on physiology. That's the three things we're working on only over this whole 6 days. The master practitioner material, why it's so much more in depth, is because we work on the filters. We work at this level, all of this stuff in here. But the foundation level is all based on the internal representation, state, and physiology. So we know if we affect the internal representation, that has an impact on the state. And what we mean by the state is the physical, emotional state of that particular person at that time. And state is very important. State's hugely important because all of our behavior, all of our actions, as you can see here, is generated from the state. So state is vital. Because people behave very differently depending on what state they're in. Now, what's interesting about this is that people have states that they live in day to day. It's almost like they're wired to live in a particular state. Do you know what I mean by that? Now, you guys will have habitual states that you're wired to go into based on your conditioning. And some, you know, someone who's depressed, for example, they're just wired to live in this state day to day. And your job is to actually break them out of that particular pattern so they're not in that state day to day to produce a particular behavior. But if you start working here with somebody, nothing's going to change. They're not even going to hear you until you first work on changing their internal representation, which affects their state, which affects their physiology. Now, this is, if you like, this is the mind-body connection, isn't it? Yeah, and you'll be seeing signs of that during the hypnosis day that we're doing towards the end of the event. You'll notice how these things can put these, how we utilize the mind-body connection almost to actually create trance. So these things are interlinked. So we can change the state via the internal representation, but we can also change the state, can't we, from the physiology? Is that true? So, for example, if you're in a very strong, powerful state, then does that affect your internal representation? Do you make better meanings out of events when you're in a better state because you're in a better physiology? Yeah? Because, you know, when you feel sick and run down and tired, you're probably low on energy, aren't you? And when you're low on energy, your physiology definitely is impaired. Now, do you know, not when you get like a high fever and stuff like that and your physiology's really down, what's your internal representations like? They're not good, are they? In fact, they go a bit crazy, don't they? You know when you get a high temperature and you start having really crazy thoughts, you can't, it's all a bit weird? It's because what's happened is the physiology's been affected, and so forth, therefore the internal representations. That's why you have these strange, weird nightmares and things like that, because the internal representation's been freaked out. So when you're very ill, one of the things you can do, obviously, is to put yourself into the best possible physiology you can be in, even though you feel sick. And what you do is you might train your body, if you like, to come out of that state rather than go more and more into it. Okay, great. So let's have a look at that very quickly. Let's have a look at that internal representation. What we're really saying is then what happens is when we take information from the outside, we can take it in how? Same as this. So we take it in for a VAKOG and we put it inside in a VAKOG as well, don't we? You can see a picture, you can remember a sound, you can create a feeling or a smell or a taste. And, of course, one extra thing you can do inside as well. What's that? AD. What do we mean by AD? Talk to yourself, your own self-talk. So AD is the words that we use to label our experience. Which is interesting. And we put it this way on purpose because AD is one logical level removed from true experience. What we're saying in NLP terms is that AD is one logical level, which means it's one level. It's one level removed from true experience. Look, this is true experience. Because that is your experience, isn't it? When you experience something inside, you're experiencing a picture, a sound, a feeling, a taste, a smell or a taste, right? That's true experience. And listen, true experience is beyond words, isn't it? Words, all we've done as human beings, we've designed words, language, to represent our experiences, isn't it? Because if you didn't have language, you wouldn't be able to describe something. But remember that language itself, once you label something, the moment you give something a label, you've removed it from the true experience. And most people have problems because of the way they represent their experiences here. So language is one logical level removed itself from true experience. True experience is beyond words. It's the same thing, like, you know, when you have a funny moment and you're laughing your head off, and you're laughing, you just can't stop laughing. Remember a time like that? Everybody remember a time where you've laughed out loud completely and you're rolling on the floor? Maybe it happened not too long ago or even the distant past. And you know what it's like when you're laughing and you're like, your stomach's actually completely hurting completely, and you look up and because of the various anchors that are going on, it sets you off and you keep laughing. Even like something completely stupid oftentimes, isn't it? It's just like totally meaningless in the out of context. And of course, what you go and you tell your partner about it, and what do they say? It's like, it's not funny at all, is it, to them? Because the moment you try and label what happened, it loses all of its magic. So you need to remember that language is restrictive in its way, because once you label something, you're a logical level removed from the experience. And oftentimes, you know, we'll label things and it's the label that's the problem. Because what we do is, as human beings, we like to label things because then we think we can understand it. So if you go to the doctor, I should always say things like this. If you've got doctors, for example, they label things. They put things into boxes for you. Even though those particular challenges may not actually fit in the box, they say, well, it must be X, when maybe it's a whole new thing altogether. So labeling, and if you give someone a label, they'll live up to it. So if you give someone a label of depression, you're depressed. Hey, presto, great, I'm depressed, I've got a label. But the label is a logical level removed from the experience, and in the experience itself, if we take it back, this is the real problem. The real problem is here. But most people have the problem, most people believe the problem is there, outside of themselves. They believe the problem is the events, the circumstances, the people around them. So there, what they do is they try and change the world outside of them to have their problems go away. And of course, that never works. Which brings us on very nicely to our next frame, which is one of my favorite frames, which is perception is projection. What it means is that what you see outside of yourself is actually you. Everything you see outside of yourself is you. every person, every living thing, if you want to take it to the real esoterical level, everything outside of yourself is you. It's like, you know, the analogy I often use is, if you imagine this is you can see this is the projector and this is the screen. So imagine this screen is what you see outside of you. That's your life. That's what you view, the screen. And the projector is you. So if there's a problem, if there's an imperfection on the screen, what we often do is we end up trying to rub the screen, trying to get the imperfection to go away without realizing that the challenge is actually at the projector with the lens. And so the imperfection is actually on our own eye, if you like. So everywhere you go, you see the imperfections that you see in yourself, which is a good thing, because that's the reason people show up in your life. People show up in your life to remind you and show you who you are, so that you can have that problem go away. Because if you didn't have other people showing up in your life to show you what problems you had, you wouldn't realize you had a problem. And you'd never grow. You'd walk around with that challenge and that limiting behavior inside of yourself without noticing it. So from an esoteric point of view, other people show up in your life to show you who you are. In the old phrase is, you know, point one finger out, there's three pointing back at you. That's an old esoterical phrase. That's what we mean. So if you're judging somebody else, actually what's happening is you're judging yourself. Only every time, though.